What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have a fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favor to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a very special guest for me today. My guest today is John O'Sullivan. Good afternoon. Good morning, John, I guess.
Good morning, yes, from the west coast of the US. Good morning.
Awesome. John, just, I'm really pleased to kind of have you with me, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation for a little while now. But just before we get into the thick of it, maybe a brief insight around who you are and what you do.
Yeah, sure. So these days, and I'm probably here for my work as founder of Changing the Game Project, and then also co-host with my friend Jerry Lynch of the Way of Champions podcast. And basically, after, you know, quite a few decades as a, you know, football, soccer, as we call it here, player and coach on the university level, I played in the USL, which is a league below MLS, for a little while. I then coached university and coached, you know, lots of youth. Still to this day, I have a group of under 17 boys and about 60 7 to 9 year olds, hence my lack of hair. So I do that. And then, with Changing the Game Project, you know, we do coach education and parent education in sport. We do team development work with university teams as well. And so I'm kind of traveling a lot all over the world, working on, coach ed across many sports, from football to swimming to rugby to ski racing and everything in between. And so, it's really fun. I've been lucky enough to publish a couple of books, which have all done well, which I'm sure, I hope some of your listeners have read, and working on another one right now with Jerry. We wrote one together called The Champion Teammate, and it went so well, we're working on another one right now as well.
Look, if you're anything like Jerry, the guy's relentless when it comes to writing books, right?
Oh, he is. He's incredible. He's a tough teammate in that regards. Like, the standard is high. It's like being Kobe Bryant's teammate.
Being around him, though, must be so inspiring sometimes. And obviously, I want to kind of, but, you know, coming back to your own journey, your insights, and, you know, why you do what you do, really. I mean, looking at the coach education piece, I think one of the things that I've learned to appreciate myself, you know, and just to give you a bit of context around my own journey, you know, I've been coaching for about 15 years myself, and coming up to the 15 years anyway, but more recently, in that kind of last 6-7 years, it's really been much more around coach education, coach development. So I want to start by asking you a question around how things have transitioned. And obviously, we've gone from having coach educators to now what's commonly being referred to as a coach developer. So I want to start with that, John, and just maybe get a bit of insight around what your observations and thoughts are around that. And, you know, maybe some perspective as to whether, you know, you viewed the change and you've experienced the change in a similar way to myself to start with.
Yeah, and I even like sometimes the terminology of coach mentors. I mean, I feel like a lot of coach developers are really coach mentors, and because a coach educator is sort of like you show up in the classroom, we throw knowledge at you, and then you walk away and you're on your own. Whereas a developer or a mentor is someone who walks the path with you, and gives you feedback along the way. And so I think coach education has made big changes. Obviously, I see it more in North America on the football front, and sort of when I went and I have my A license through the United States Soccer Federation, and when I went through it, it was kind of like the whole process was to weed people out. So you had to play, and then you had to coach, and in 8 days you got your license or you didn't. And the job of the instructor was basically to get rid of people who shouldn't have one. And now it's much more like you do in UEFA, you would do in the FA, where you walk alongside someone for a year, and you help them get better, and you give them feedback, and you work with them in their own environment. And so I think that's so much better, because as a coach developer, you're learning as well, right? When I work with coaches, I see them do, why'd you do that? That was really good. I hadn't seen that, right? And because a lot of these coaches, right, they're classroom teachers. So the way they talk to the kids or ask or check for understanding, I'm like, ah, that was awesome. I'm going to add that. So this idea, it's the shift from, as they would say, the sage on the stage to a partner in this. And I think that's great. And it hopefully takes the ego out of it and says, we're both going to be better after this time together.
It's really interesting looking at it. It's good, well, positive for me to see that, actually that perception of maybe what the role and the function of a coach educator and what that looks like as a coach developer it is now, because it is so wide ranging, right? There's multiple functions. It is maybe partly in parts still being a coach educator, but actually the mentor piece and working alongside with you, and sometimes just being a reflective, accountability partner, if you like. So there's so many different facets to what that looks like. But I'm interested in, obviously, you mentioned that you've had experience working in so many different sports. Is there any consistencies or universal things that maybe are being considered across all the different sports? And what are some of the nuanced things before? Actually, now that I've delved into this sport and learned about, I guess, their approach and how they're trying to view the world of coaching and the role of a coach, if you like, that actually then open up your mind to something else that you hadn't considered based on your prior experiences, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I would say what there was, 10, 12 years ago when I started Changing the Game Project, was a consistent lack of teaching the social emotional skills of coaching, of leadership to coaches within coach education. It was all X's and O's based. And so I've seen a shift in awareness across sports that, hey, that's part of it. I don't think we're anywhere near where we need to be, right? Regardless of sport, if you need an activity for your practice, if you can spell Google, you've got thousands, right? But when you ask, like when I do coach education, I'll sit down and I'll hand out sticky notes to my coaches, to the coaches in the room, and say, okay, write down the five qualities of the best coach you ever had. And 90% of those qualities have to do with connection, excuse me, connection and emotional intelligence, and 10% have to do with skills, right? Or knowledge of the sport. So in every room, from rugby to tennis to golf to football to ice hockey, whatever, the walls always look the same. And then I say to them, yet when you go do coach education, where do you spend 95% of your time? And they still point to the skills and knowledge side of things. And I think because that's easier to impart, or that's and it's easier to test and measure. But things like communication, things like connection, trust, those things are skills we can develop as well. And so this is where I think we still have to add more. Because that's what, kids, once kids know that you care, then they care what you know.
I think it's a great point, and it just reminds me of recent conversations I've had with many people in that. I think you're spot on. I think they do definitely there has been that shift, and you know, there has been a monumental shift, in my opinion, from it being about X's and O's to effectively what you're saying is developing an environment, right? And creating a positive culture and an environment. Now, my only, I guess, my concern, if you know, I mean, it sounds strong, but if I was to put it that way, would be that I think because it's moved away from X's and O's, and I think it would be a fair assessment, observation to suggest that this is across the board, regardless of the sport, that this is where the direction coaching is moved, right? Is that, okay, well, what happens to those coaches who have now got to a position where we've developed a positive culture, we've developed those connections, but we don't have any understanding or enough understanding of the X's and O's? Are we not putting too much emphasis on building those connections and, you know, in the hope that that's all it's going to take, if that makes sense?
I mean, I, yes and no, you know, I think, I mean, there's very few people who coach beyond their knowledge base, right? Like, if you're working with 6 year olds, cause your son or your daughter's playing, your knowledge base doesn't have to be super high. And yes, someone with massive knowledge of the sport, you know, could teach a couple different nuances on how to lock the ankle or see something different. So again, none of this is a call to get rid of the X's and O's, but I still think there is a massive emphasis. If you're working in an academy of a pro team and you're training 4 days a week and playing a match on the weekend, that's very different than a grassroots coach with one or two practices and maybe a match on the weekend. You're not really worried about periodization, right? And certainly here in North America, right? Like, I look at this and go, you know, the kids that I coach 2 days a week are also playing basketball 2 days a week. and then they, you know, have PE and gym class in school, and then they go to swim lessons in the morning. And so the idea that I'm managing their load in soccer, I'm not managing anything, right? Because they're piling tons more stuff on it. And oftentimes they show up at the game on the weekend after playing a basketball game that morning, you know? So it's like, you know, so again, it's not that it's not important, but I think it's easier to impart a lot of the X's and O's stuff. I think if I run a club, I can teach people the philosophy of why do our training sessions look a certain way and why do we use certain activities. And then, hey, these are good activities to use and teach and grow. And you know what? If the team that you have developed moves beyond that, maybe you're just a great coach for, you know, 10 to 12 year olds. Doesn't mean you need to move up and coach 18-year-olds.
No, I think more specifically, I think I'm looking at the idea, well, if we are trying to develop a positive culture and a positive environment, you know, how long does that really take, right? And I know it can be an ongoing thing and it's something that you kind of have to maintain.
I think it's an everyday thing. Yeah.
It is an everyday thing, right? But I think, you know, if that's the only focus, and I'm just playing devil's advocate. I understand the benefits, but if that's the sole focus of the coach, and maybe it's just my personal perspective that's kind of coming through here, but I look at it as, well, as a coach, you're trying to create that positive environment, but you're also trying to develop the individuals. Now, sometimes it's about trying to develop them, in my opinion, beyond what they maybe anticipated was possible, right? And if that's kind of my mindset, then it's almost like, well, it's a given to some extent that, yeah, you know, part of that's going to be having a connection, but actually the connection in itself is almost, it opens the door for you to then impart some knowledge. But if I don't have that knowledge to impart, and it's not to say that it has to be high level or whatever, but if I don't have any knowledge of where they're at and what is maybe, I don't want to call it right, but what is useful for them to help them improve, then I can have the best connection in the world, but all that's going to do is set a positive environment. But if I've now got to a point where consistently, like I said, like an everyday thing, if I've created a positive environment and I'm maintaining a positive environment, at some point, surely it then becomes a responsibility. Okay, you've done that. You've laid the foundation because you've created the environment. Now let's add the next layer on, or is that maybe just
I think you do all these things at the same time. It's not like, oh, today's practice is creating a positive environment. I'm always creating a positive environment. I'm always
that's my
right?
point. So
when I show up to training, when I show up to training and I'm walking around and seeing kids and say, hey, yes, how are you doing, man? Good. How is, you know, how's the thing, right? Hey, how was your, you know, how'd your, you know, how'd that math test go? Hey, just wanted to say great job again this weekend. That was one of the best games I've seen play. These are 20-second, 30-second interactions that create that connection and tells your athletes, I see you, right? But what I say to people all the time who say, oh, I don't have time to focus on things like core values, right? Like my teams all have sort of values. They have non-negotiables. These are the things we do here. For me, number one is joy. Right? It's supposed to be fun, right? So we focus on joy. We focus on what we call family, which is respect, right? And treating each other well and things like that. And we focus on competitiveness. Like you got to show up and compete, not just work hard, but compete. Like these are the things that, and then accountability, those would be the four, right? For my group right now of 17-year-olds. Now, if I don't focus on competing, who cares how many practices I have? If we're playing at 80% speed, if we're not trying, if we're laughing and joking around instead of going hard or playing quickly or whatever it is. So what I say to people is when you set some values or some non-negotiables or whatever you want to call them, what you're always doing is upholding the standard, right? So if we're not meeting the standard, I have to call it out. I don't care what my practice plan is, right? If I could have the best practice plan in the world, and if the focus and the intensity is not there, who cares, right? If the defenders in a session are not running and tackling and challenging, we're not learning anything. And so I'm always upholding the standard. I'm always upholding the values. And what that gives me is quality of training time. Right. So I'd rather have an hour of high quality than 90 minutes of average. And I see a lot of people allowing average to creep into their sessions. Right. I also see a lot of people in sort of like their sessions don't move quickly. So when I do like coach mentorship, one of the first things I do is I just put a stopwatch on a coach and I time how much time the ball is not rolling. Right. And in a 90 minute session, the first time I work with a coach, oftentimes it's about 45 minutes, right? And then what I'll say to the coach is, how much time do you think the ball wasn't rolling in your session when you were talking, they were getting water or whatever it is? And their answer is usually 15 minutes or 20. And I'm like, it was 45. Here's the stopwatch. And they're like, whoa. And I'm like, so man, if you have three practices a week and you're only getting 45 out of your 90, wow, if you cut that down to 20, you're like getting an extra practice a week, man. So let's go, right? And so I think it's things like that, that an intense, accountable, quick moving, organized session, super important. But then, you know, in that environment that of love and trust and respect, because I don't care where you're coaching, most of your players aren't turning pro. If any of them, for most of us, none of our players are turning pro.
I'm so glad you mentioned that as well, because you know, the question that I've started asking people more recently is, how do you know what you're doing is working?
Yeah,
that's a great question. How do you know what you're doing is working? Because if you're going to, you know, let's take an example, so you're going to lay claim to some of the players that you've worked with that have gone on to do something, well, if that's your logic, then aren't you equally going to be laying claim to all the people that didn't go through as a result of your methods?
Right, exactly. We can't just pick the unicorns.
Precisely, right? So I mean, you know, it is that question around, well, how do you know what you're doing is working? But, you know, coming back to your point, I think, you know, you're spot on. I think you do want to create that environment. But I guess, you know, like I said, I use the word very loosely, but that word concern, the concern is that, well, if my focus is just developing a positive environment, what happens once I've created that space, that place for players to come to and enjoy it and have fun and be challenged and it be competitive?
Mm-hmm.
But I get what you're saying.
And what kids say when they're asked, like, what brings joy or what makes sports fun, that challenging, competitive environment is what makes it fun. So if you don't have any X's and O's, they're not going to enjoy it. It's not going to be a great environment, right?
Isn't part of that them not understanding that these things are also important? Because maybe, I mean, again, I'm playing devil's advocate because I'm really trying to just see what this might bring up as part of this conversation. But specifically, I'm looking at, well, if they've never considered it, then why would they talk about it, right? Equally, you know, I remember having a conversation recently with my coach, and, you know, he suggested the idea of maybe letting the players choose the activities. And I thought, okay, that's brilliant in principle because you're giving them ownership. But my question to him was, what's the chances that they're going to pick something they haven't seen you deliver to them before?
Right. And so, you know, the other side of that, and again, I want to be crystal clear. I've never met anyone, certainly not me, says, oh, you know, don't worry about X's and O's, right? That is not the thing. But again, I went through coach education where all they talked about was X's and O's, right? Where the 100+ hours of education to get this license, 45 minutes was spent on psychology. You really telling me that it's less than 1% of the importance of a player? That's bull, right? So, you know, psychology and social dynamics are part of every session. Now, you know, I'll work with players. Like, I think coaches have favorite activities. I think one of the worst things you can do is every practice is a new activity that you have to teach and whatever. Like, there's great, simple, basic activities that players understand and they like and they enjoy that you can teach lots of different things from by manipulating sizes of the field, the ball you're playing with, the touches, the time, the defenders, whatever it is. So many different ways to do that. but hey, here's the basic activity, right? And it replicates the game really well because there's chaos and transition and all these different things. So, you know, I think, you know, but sometimes, you know, sometimes I'll say, like last night with the under 17 boys I was working with, we were working on like speed of play and switching the play. And we were playing just, you know, a sort of wide, short field, attack 3 goals, defend 3 goals. We're playing a 9v9 plus one because we had 19 kids there. And, you know, we were going to play just, you know, a 9-a-side or a 10v9 at the end to goals. And I asked the kids, because the game was going well, and we were playing like 8-minute games. And I said, all right, you want to go to a, you know, bigger game at the end tonight, or you want to do this one more time? They said, let's do this. This is great. Like, they were having fun. They're enjoying it. There's nothing wrong with that, right? Because the energy was high, the quality of play was high, the competitiveness was high. It was teaching what we were looking for. And on the night, yeah, we didn't need to go to goal at the end of it because it was good. Now, would I do that every night? No. I still had a practice plan and activities that we went through to get to that point. But in that moment, letting them say, how do we want to finish training tonight? Amen to that. It can't always be about the coach, because ownership matters. And again, that's a group that's been with me for a while, right? So the environment is set and understood. And so there's a comfort level there. But, you know, like also a couple of weeks ago, the team came off at halftime, right? And my team captain grabbed the magnet board. And Gret called the team in and said, this is our problem. This is why the press isn't working. We need to do this, this, and this. And I was like, great, done. Awesome. That's what I would have fixed too. So now the intelligence is on the field, not on the sideline. And the intelligence has to be on the field. Too many coaches, it's all about them. They're the solution. They're the practice. And I want my kids to solve things themselves.
Yeah, and I think you're spot on. And I think, you know, it just reminds me of my own, you know, if people to ask me, what are you going after when you're coaching? And I guess in some ways, you know, the vision of my coaching philosophy, if you like, is to develop a situation where the players that I'm working with effectively become what I refer to as technically and tactically proficient, but they're interdependent from a standpoint of they are technically tactically proficient, so they understand the game well enough. They have the competencies and the capabilities to play and function within the game, but fundamentally they also have the social and psychological awareness and understanding to recognize, actually, here's a challenge that I'm facing, and they're able to self-diagnose, self-correct. But equally, if they understand and appreciate, actually, you know, on this occasion I need coach's help, they're confident enough to be able to go in, request and seek that help, yeah. Which I think is so crucial. And I think, you know, listening to what you just said about, you know, well, that's what I would have tackled and addressed at the same point, is like, that's kind of how I am on match day as well. It's almost like, well, I'll make my observations, but the first thing I'm doing is, well, what do you guys notice? If you're noticing what I noticed, then we're on a good track. And not to say that if it's not the same, we're not on the right track, or we're not on a good path, but I now know if I've got six things on my list that I want to talk about, as an example, six observations I've made, and you've already identified three of them from your perceptions, let's talk about those. Let's address the ones that you've already got an awareness of.
Mm-hmm. There's a guy from Ireland sent me, he did his master's research on halftime talks and the effectiveness of halftime talks. And I think he did it in Gaelic football. But same thing, right? And what do people remember? And it's very little, right? So it's sort of like, you know, if you make 3 points, you probably make none. So what's the most important thing that you're going to get across in this? Because after 20, 30 seconds, they're tuning out. And this is even on the professional level. Mm. So to think I'm going to have a player leave halftime with six different changes or observations is probably not there. Right. Certainly, yeah. As a team, as a collective, it's probably not there. So what's the most important thing that makes the biggest difference? Right. That's what I want to emphasize there. And then maybe one other thing or whatever. And then maybe with an individual, right? I grab my goalkeeper and I'm like, hey, you know what? We're having more success playing out the right side. Well, let's try to play out the right side here. Great. That's just for him, the team, you know. Whatever. So I think that's the kind of thing. Like we also have to be careful because we see all these things, but remember what it was like to be a player.
Yeah.
As well,
I think, you know, it's almost counterintuitive, right? Because I think some coaches would suggest, well, look, I've given you 10 points. Even if you hold on to two of them, then we're on the right track. Well, it's actually, you know, just give them one thing to focus on, and at least give then one. That one thing there, I guess you can make it easier for you to measure whether they're actually able to achieve it or not. But if you're trying to look for, you know, it's like that old analogy, right? You know, you chase five rabbits, you probably end up with none. Yeah, you chase one, you might catch it.
There was I did this golf conference, and one of the speakers said he was talking about when Albert Einstein learned to play golf, and the golf instructor was throwing all these ideas at him, and Albert Einstein grabbed a pile of golf balls and, you know, threw one to the guy and he caught it, and then he threw them all, and the guy's like, whoa. He goes, exactly, you know. So you know, be careful there.
I think it's a great visual to kind of think about, right? So I guess in that, then, using that as the basis, if I as a coach don't have enough awareness and understanding of those X's and O's, how do I know which ball to throw?
I mean, exactly, great, but throw the best ball you can, right? Throw the best ball you can. I might not, you know, I'm not going to get the exact nuance as a higher level coach than I am, but I'm also not coaching Man City. Right. Mm-hmm. So I don't need to solve that for them. Mm-hmm. Right. And again, you know, a lot of them, you know, in the moment, you're not solving problems for them. They have to solve them for themselves anyway. So mm-hmm. in the developmental space, right, I am trying to give people, I'm trying to give my players enough repetitions of situations so that when they see it in a match, they go, yeah, I've seen that before. Right. And I know what are possible solutions, and I can pick one and then hopefully have the technical ability to execute it. Right. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to create scenarios in training that just give lots of people repetition of context, because the only thing that transfers, when we talk about transfer, what we do in training into a match, the only thing that transfers is context. If mm-hmm. if it doesn't look like the match, right, then then it's not going to transfer, right? Mm-hmm. If you and I are you know, passing a ball back and forth with no defender, no movement, mm-hmm. no direction, that's that we're just learning to kick a ball,
right? Yeah.
So that's that's the thing. Is my training replicating what they're going to see in a match often enough? Now, can I manipulate constraints, time, space, defenders, right, so that they can have a little more success and get extra repetitions in practice? Of course, that's awesome, right? But if they never see a I see lots of coaches think, oh, well, they're not ready, they can't do it with a defender, so we're not going to add defenders in training, and then wonder why it doesn't work on Saturday.
Yeah, I think you're spot on, you know, and then you get that age-old phrase of, come on, we worked on this in training. Well, no, we didn't. we didn't work on this in training. Like, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's the key piece, right? And I think it's just to build on what you said, and I always said to coach, you know, it's not saying that you're not going to get moments in the game where things are unopposed, but the better question to maybe think about is, well, how long does it stay that way?
Right.
Right, because it might be an unopposed pass that you're playing, but what's the purpose of the pass that you're playing, and is that purpose of the pass that you're playing in the game the same as the purpose you've applied to it within the session that you're delivering? Because if it is, then that will fundamentally manufacture its own constraint in the fact that this is the reason why we're playing the pass. Therefore, the pressure or the opposition or the interference, wherever it might be, needs mm-hmm. to be positioned in a particular way, which then, as you quite rightly said, replicates itself as it would in the game. And you know, it's less about the technical components that are existing within it, but more about the scenario itself. So if it is passing and receiving, the question I always ask coaches, I think, well, yes, you might be working on passing and receiving, but the question is, does the passing and receiving in your session look like the passing and receiving in your game?
Right, right. And if are you hitting a ball at the correct pace, at the correct time, to the correct foot, and moving to the right space, giving them the right communication, right? Are they receiving it with an awareness of where the next ball has to go, who's around them, all that, right? And you can't do that without defenders, right? You
100%, can't
do that without, yeah.
Yeah, and the specificity, but more specifically, to go to the point where, you know, it's something that I've been working with in the recent years, is just getting coaches, if in the context of football as an example, you know, as an invasion game, it's just, well, whatever you want to deliver, John, go and deliver it, but just ask yourself this: does the theme of your session make sense if you added on the end of it, in possession, I want to?
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Do X, Y, Z, so whatever your theme is, in order to penetrate.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't allow you to complete the sentence with that on the end of it, it probably isn't realistic to the game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because fundamentally, the purpose is not the theme. The purpose is the penetration.
Right. No, yeah, I hear what you're saying. Now, this also doesn't mean that there's not a time and space to pull a kid aside and teach them to lock their ankle correctly, or, hey, their plant foot, or your opposite arm is in the wrong place, and so you don't have balance when you're striking a ball. It also doesn't, you know, again, for the vast, like, I've actually never met a coach at any level who says, I have too much practice time, let me give some back, right? So the time that we gather as a group is an important time to work on group dynamics, right? And do that, and then send kids home with little activities and homework to work on that touch, find a kickback wall, hit it against your garage door, whatever it is that's the time to work one-on-one with a ball. But when we come together, let's not all play by ourselves.
No, I think you're spot on. And I'm smiling because, I'm saying to Coach Wilson, we often have debates, I guess, and I'm sure you've been there as well, around the benefits, the pros and cons, and the place of, of unopposed versus opposed practice, right? Mm-hmm. And I always kind of frame it in this way, similar to what you've done, really. What sense does it make for me to get you to do unopposed practice that you could, in theory, do away from this environment by yourself?
Right.
In this environment where you've got a coach to your benefit. Mm-hmm. How am I helping you? How am I maximizing your ability and your efficiency? Now, I've had this view for quite a long time. I think the only time, and it's funny, I've mentioned this the other day when I was having a conversation there. It's for the first time in maybe 6 years that viewpoint was challenged. And I genuinely had to think about this. And to give some context, and this is why context is so key, and it's about finding what's right for the individuals in front of you, is I'm working at the moment with a group of female players. And for someone who typically doesn't operate with unopposed practice generally in the team-based environment, I was genuinely challenged for the first time to say, actually, this might be a place for it. Mm-hmm. Not because they can't go away and do the stuff that we might set them as homework tasks, but actually they're probably not going to do it.
Right.
Because my observations and my personal experiences working with female players in comparison to that of the male players, especially at teenage years, is, well, as a young male teenager, you might just rock up to the local park or wherever it is and go and play with your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Female players just typically, from my observations and my experiences, don't do that. Mm-hmm. And almost won't do that, actively won't do it. In fact, to the point where they probably don't even watch the sport outside of when they're involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
So now, I guess the challenge for me was, well, whether intentionally, deliberately or not, the boys are getting additional contact time with mm-hmm. the game and the mm-hmm. ball itself. Whether that's uncoached, supervisor or whatever, but the girls are not getting that. So actually, we might have to deliberately and intentionally design that in the team-based environment, because we know that they're based on the conversations we've had and their individual context, they're probably very unlikely to go and do it elsewhere. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I don't think, it probably depends on where you live and the culture to make a male-female differentiator or whatever, because there's plenty of males who don't pick up a ball or don't watch a game either. 100%. Certainly. I think as a young coach, I would even say I was offended by that, right? But now I don't. Now I'm like, okay, fair enough. If you choose never to touch a ball, the kids who don't, because they show up to training and their ball's flat. I'm like, so you haven't touched a ball since we saw you last week, or since, a month ago when we took a month break or whatever it is, right? So yeah, I know you haven't been playing. But that's your choice. I don't take offense to it. But then the reality is, those whose balls are pumped up, those people who are playing, they're going to pull ahead of you. And someone might eventually take your place, right? And you can't complain when someone takes your place, because you haven't put in the hours that they've put in, right? And so the hard part in team sport is, hey, you have this group and you're moving through, and we rely on players, 14 through 18 or whatever it is, who aren't touching a ball extra, and maybe the top 13 are, or maybe the top 9 are. But it's like, okay, I'll cajole, I'll talk to them. You need to touch the ball outside of practice. I'll do team challenges with my little kids. We do like a little bingo game and do challenges, trying to get them to make extra touches. But ultimately, if you choose not to, that's wonderful. That's great. We have a ski mountain in our town, and my boys will play against teams that train 4 days a week. We get 2 to 3. They play more, twice as many games a year, but my kids are way better skiers, and that's what they choose to spend their time on, right? And so fair enough, like, great. And but then you set the expectation of like, if your inputs are this, then the outputs are going to be this. Now, I also think there's nothing wrong, right? If you have four activities in your session, three of them are opposed at some way and one unopposed, no problem. Four out of five. So sometimes in the sort of activation phase in the beginning, right, I'll work in a little passing pattern, you know, quick play, but it's really just, it's getting touches during a warm-up phase of training as well, right? And so some days we have that, some days we don't. And it usually depends, right? Last night it was, you know, 20 degrees Fahrenheit. So what's that, you know, 5 below 0, it was cold, right? So, you know, I asked the boys, hey, how do you want to get moving tonight? Because it's cold out, right? And so they did that. And we had a passing pattern and then a smaller rondo and then this 3-goal, 6-goal game or whatever. And that was the training session, right? But,
yeah,
you know.
And I was just thinking something that's interesting about, you know, you may take me back to something you said earlier about essentially the players understanding your standard and your expectation, mm-hmm. right? And you know, you've almost created an environment where they, I guess, where they're going to buy into some of the key messages that you're trying to share or some of the philosophical approaches to what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And they learn to kind of buy into that and understand that actually, you know, something that I'm big on is, and I often think about this is, I'm big on, again, trying to develop a sense of awareness. But in order for me to really do that effectively, I need to ask a lot of questions to really check and challenge the understanding of what players have. And I think one of the biggest, I guess, challenges that, or the pushback that comes with that is, we often think that when someone asks us a question, they're trying to catch us out, or they're just trying mm-hmm. to test us in some way. And it's like, I have to, you know, I find myself consistently, you know, session after session after session. And it's maybe takes the best part of 6 to 8 months before I kind of, and sometimes even I still have to remind them, I'm not trying to catch you out. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to catch you. I just want to know what you know. I just want to know what you think, because if I understand what you think, then I understand whether I'm being effective in what I believe I need to be doing, or more specifically, if what you've interpreted is what I needed you to interpret. And if it's not, it's not a problem, because yeah. actually you might have picked up on something that I wasn't even intending to share that's actually really useful for you.
Yeah. You know, I want to ask you this, if this has ever happened to you. I learned from a group I was coaching once, you know, in this activity and we were doing, I stopped it because it was so good. Right. Mm. And I was like, you know, and I was thinking, I was like, how do you think that was? And they were all like, yeah, not so good, whatever. And yeah. I was like, no, I thought that was awesome. But then, you know, my learning was, wow, do I only often stop it when it's not good? So they've learned, oh, stoppage means problem.
Yes.
And so don't go that, like, no kid had the, you know, had the guts to be like, that was effing fantastic, coach.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, I got to stop it more often when it's good and point that out as well.
100%. I think you're spot on. And I think, you know, just as I'm thinking about that, we are very, I guess, synonymous with error correction, right? And one of the things that I talk about a lot, especially in some of the stuff that I deliver, is around, or how do we stretch through praise?
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost that element of, you know, catch them when they're doing it right, but mm-hmm. help them understand what they're doing right in order to get it to look that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I talk about it. So as an example, you know, right, John, I really love the way that you did, you know, you opened up your body in that position, because actually that really helped you to do X, Y, Z. Or, John, did you notice what you just did there? Because again, there's going to be times the players do things and they don't even understand they're doing them. So how do we bring some conscious thought and awareness to that? Oh, you know, just tell me a little bit, John, like, you know, why did you do it that way?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
because I recognize this. Okay, brilliant. That's, you know, that's actually a really good observation, and I get a really good response to that. So it's almost like that element of what gets rewarded gets repeated, and you're trying to really just mm-hmm. bring that back in. And now all of a sudden they've got, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, let me try that again. Yeah, yeah, try it again. But again, it's that checking the understanding piece of, well, why did you do it? And when might you not be able to do it anymore? And it just, again, it reminds me of something else that happened this morning. In fact, I recently started martial arts. And I was sparring with one of my friends. And he's learned a new submission, right? And he just keeps trying to go for the new submission again and again and again. And it's like, well, there's going to be a time where the window of opportunity is there for that.
Yeah.
But once it's gone, you can't just go back to, you know, that window. You need to move on to the next thing. So it's that timing element and, you know, understanding when it's available is really key, right? So I guess in this case is what you're doing, you might have done something well, but the timing was off. So if the timing was off, let's help you understand that what you did was really well in the technique. However, here's an area for development, if that makes sense. And
right.
You're really being nuanced about it.
100%, right? The right technique, it was just the wrong decision, right? You didn't solve the problem that was in front of you. You solved the problem that was 15 seconds ago, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what we could probably label creativity, right? And so this is why we have to be careful as coaches that we don't tell them, you know, the only move you can do is a scissor, right? Or a Cruyff turn or something like that. Like, no, like solve your problem. Right? How would you get out of this situation? And whether, you know, player A chooses it this way or player B chooses it this way, we can offer solutions, but ultimately you figure it out. I don't know if you saw in Major League Soccer opening game, which had Miami. And so, of course, there's all this attention on Messi and everything. And there was an injured player on the field and he was laying like on the top of the box, top of the D, and Messi beat a player and he was going right at this injured player and he chipped the ball over him, jumped over him and got a shot off, you know? And like, you know, I mean, he solved the problem, right? And whatever. And it's just like, it was brilliant, you know? It was so cool to watch.
100%. And again, you know, the thing I often get, I try and encourage coaches to think about is when we're observing the game, are we observing it through our experiences? So for their experiences or our eyes in understanding that actually just because we identified it as a problem doesn't mean that they have.
Yeah.
And it's just understanding, well, when does it become a problem? When does it not become a problem? And who, for, and why? More specifically to understand that, well, we're all going to contest with the same variables and the same consideration should come into play to an extent. But how we perceive those things is going to be very different. So rather than telling players, hey, do it this way or do it that way, or here's the right time to do this, help them understand what they need to consider first, and they may end up finding their own solution without even you guiding that. But just if you just raise their considerations first, or the awareness to considerations, then they can start to, you know, oh, actually I didn't even think about that having an influence and an impact on my ability to perform, even though I've been successful. But actually, now that you're aware of it, you can probably become more conscious about how to recreate that successful moment.
Yeah, or just asking them, I'm curious what you saw there. Right. Because again, how often, right, they're playing north and south and we're coaching from east and west. So we're not looking at the same game that they are. Right. If we're staying behind them, we might say, hey, I saw that ball into the feet of, you know, your striker or your nine or whatever you want to call it. Right. But if you're watching east and west and you thought they should have played this pass, and to say, yes, I'm curious what you saw there. And they say, well, I know we're trying to play it in there, there was a player in the way, so I chose this instead. Well, I maybe didn't see it from the angle I was at, right? And so, you know, it's always that, like, understand what they saw. And if you looked at it again, what might be a better option, right? Or, you know, freeze, look behind you. Where are all the defenders, right? So, like, I see this all the time, right? These, especially young kids, got to play forward, right? Freeze. How many of us are there? One. How many of them are there? Four. Was that the best choice that you had, was to play into a 1v4? No. Who doesn't have anyone around them over there? So what might be a better choice in this moment here, right? And so I think things like that, just like, you know, show me what you see. Tell me what you see. Mm-hmm. And then tell me what a different solution might have been. Now, the hardest part is learning as a coach, and this comes with experience. Do I let this play out? Because if it's successful, right? You know, right? If that kid who is 1v4 gets it to his feet and beats all four and scores, is that really a coaching point? it's hard.
It's an interesting one, because I had a conversation with a coach yesterday, and we were just talking about the idea of you know, he's come and attended a course recently that, you know, that I was part of the delivery team on. And he said one of the takeaways for him was he has a player in his team who loves to dribble the ball. And, you know, basically effectively coming into the course, his perception was this player's not his, just his perception, but the general perception of this player was this player's a bit of a ball hog.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because following the conversation and the interaction on being on like that workshop, his perception has now changed to actually this player is willing to take risks.
Yeah.
So he's gone from being a ball hog to willing to take risks. So the question I asked him was, well, how many of your teammates or how many of his teammates and the players that you're working with are actually willing to take that risk?
Mm-hmm.
And based on the age and stage that they're in, how many of them can you genuinely feel that you'd be able to coach them to take risks?
Right.
So, you know, what is the problem they're actually looking at? Is it the fact that he takes risks? Is it the fact that he's a ball hog? Or is it the fact that actually the problem here is we've got someone who's really willing to take the risks? They just don't quite understand where and when it's appropriate.
Yeah. Or sometimes beyond that as well is, well, they're dribbling because when they receive the ball, their body position and profile is wrong that their head's down and they don't know what's around them. So they have to take four touches to finally get their head back up. So that's a problem as well, right? So you see a lot of kids who dribble because they don't have a solution in mind before they get it. So they're unable to play quickly. And then you have that kid who looks at the 1v3 and goes, I'm going for it. And those are two different things. And it's the nuance of the coach of, you know, hey, why is your head down or why are you dribbling? You wanted to take those on? That's risk-taking. Love it. Great. Right. And where's the place on the field that's the best place to do that and whatever versus, oh, you're doing it because you had no idea when you received the ball, what was around you, where you were going, your hips were not open and, you know, and you had to dribble just to find a solution.
100%.
That's not right either. Yeah.
No, I think you're spot on. And I think even within that, sometimes it's the conscious awareness that actually this person's having to dribble because no one else is actually available to them.
Yeah.
And, you know, and especially with young players.
And they go, I'm not passing to him because I'll never get it back.
Yeah. 100%. So funny. You know,
years
it's
ago,
a double-edged sword.
I have to tell you a sort of grassroots coaching story. Years ago, living in a different state, and I heard about a kid who was an exchange student. And he was living out in the middle. I was in Michigan and he was living out in this little small town, small high school. And I reached out and I said, hey, I heard, you got this good player. And people are like, you know, same thing. But he's like 14 or 15, you know, that ball hog, you know, whatever, you know, just dribbles, just doesn't do anything. I'm like, well, whatever. I'll be the judge. So I invite him into my team's training session with higher level players. And I'm watching for 10 minutes. I'm like, holy cow, this kid's phenomenal. So I grab him. His name is Ali. I'm like, Ali, where are you from, man? He's like, oh, I play for Atletico Madrid, right? He goes, I'm just an exchange student here. But, I mean, he was on the youth team with, like, Torres, right, at Madrid. And I was like, you know, I'm like, and here's people going, oh, he just dribbles too much. I'm like, well, the reason he's dribbling too much and trying to nutmeg everyone is because there's no one to pass it to. But now he'll play quickly and give and go and run and still dribble a lot because he's a great player, right? And so, you know, is that kid in an environment where his only solution is to take risks? And, you know, again, there's so many.
100% is there. Now that he's in that environment with, you know, essentially better players, there's probably more trust and faith in the fact that if he does give it to someone, he's not necessarily will get it back. But they're not going to fall to the possession of it.
Right, exactly.
So, there is that trust element too. So I think that is really important. It's really important to kind of address it and look at all the different considerations within it. John, I am conscious of time. So I want to kind of really, you know, get your thoughts on a couple of different things in particular. But, you know, having the experiences that you've had in both, you know, working with Jerry and, you know, in different sports and, you know, doing all the coach education stuff that you have done, what would you say are some of the kind of, the real core things and consistent things that coaches really need to have a good grasp of if they want to, you know, get some real success with their play, and regardless of the age and stage as well, like there's some consistent things that this is just a non-negotiable in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've touched on a lot of them, right? Number one for me, right, they don't care how much you know till they know how much you care, right? So you have to be invested in them, and it doesn't matter, you know. Number two, understand trust, right? So trust isn't just about your ability. It's about connection. It's about being believable. It's, and then it's also about, you know, admitting when you're wrong. Number three, and this is a really consistent theme amongst, you know, on our podcast where we've had, you know, a Steve Kerr and Phil Jackson and Tony, you know, two World Cup winning coaches and, you know, phenomenal coaches, you know, be curious. Like the best coaches are super curious. They're always, you know, they're always like, how many times we've talked to Steve Kerr and then we shut off the recording. He's like, hey, what was that book you were talking about? Hey, can you connect me to this guy? Like, right. So this curiosity of there's always something else out there, which really your players notice as well. So when they see you learning and see you doing something or trying something new, then they're more open to it as well. So, you know, and then number four, you know, yeah, admit when you're wrong. Mm. Admit when you're wrong. Be vulnerable and be like, you know what, I screwed that one up.
I'm laughing to myself now because just literally as you were giving that example of Steve Kerr, thinking, yeah, it's just got to be vulnerable. Yeah, just got to be vulnerable. You know, you got to be willing to accept that. You know, you don't have all the answers, and that's absolutely fine. And if you try and make out that you do, then actually you're setting yourself up and you're setting your players up.
Yeah. And what I'll say to go back to the point we spent a lot of time talking about in the beginning, vulnerability without competency is not good, right? So highly competent and vulnerable is a great place to be, right? But you have to have the knowledge as well. You can't be vulnerable and like, I don't know what I'm doing. That's not helpful.
Yeah, because I think you're spot on. And the thing I always go back to, vulnerability and credibility, right? Because you have to have a level of insight, level of understanding, level of knowledge where the players can effectively trust that, you know what, actually working with John or working with Yas, I'm going to get something. Now, the vulnerable piece is, well, I'm not going to get everything from Yas, but he's also quite clear and has clarity and understanding of what he believes he can offer me. So then it's now a choice for me that I can make as to whether I'm going to expect more from him, mm-hmm. to what extent. And I guess him being vulnerable enough to say, actually, you know what, here's what you're going to get from me. Here's what I'm about. If you're expecting anything different, we can have that conversation. But fundamentally, if I've been open and honest and you say, look, I don't have the answer to this bit, but I feel like I can help you here, then I think that's a good way to start the experience, or start the relationship, if you like. And I think even within that, it's one thing that's kind of really stood me, you know, kept me going well, is don't be afraid to be challenged. Mm-hmm. And more, and what I'm, you know, the amount of coaches I've worked with who are often threatened to some extent to take a question from a player, mm-hmm. and I'm saying, hold on a second, like I mean, maybe I'm fortunate, maybe it has certain influences around me at the time, I'm not sure, but I just always saw it as, this is an opportunity for me.
Yeah,
this is an opportunity. This is literally them opening the door to me to say, hey, I want to trust you. Give me a reason why I should.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, that in that moment, it could even be, look, I don't have the answer to that question, but you know what? That's a really good question. Let's have a discussion about this. Or actually, do you know what? Let me go away and think about that. If I don't feel comfortable to answer it in that moment, which you can't do every time, because like you said, you need that competence. Mm-hmm. But you have to be confident enough to be able to say, do you know what? I know what I know, but I also have a good understanding of what I don't know.
Right. Exactly. And yeah, I mean, if you find yourself not knowing over and over and over, you're probably coaching the wrong level. Right. So that's the time to pass the team on, to go back to what, you know, younger kids or whatever it is, and then go be an assistant for someone who knows at that level, you know, and get your reps that way. And like, ah, yeah, now I see it, you know? So I think that there's lots of ways. I mean, I ask, you know, like when you think about this in training, right? If something's not working, is it because the players don't know what to do, or not capable of doing it, or then maybe at the end of the list, don't care? And we oftentimes are like, oh, practices, it's not working because they don't care. It's like, no, actually, do they know what to do? And are they capable of doing it, right? Or, and is the activity set up correctly to allow them to do it? Like sometimes if I have an idea for training and it's not working, like I'll stop again with older kids and be like, you guys need some more space for this? Like, is this too small? And, you know, and sometimes be like, yeah, I think so. Or sometimes be like, no, it's us. We'll fix it. Right. Mm. And so, okay, great. Right. So that little bit of ownership of something's not working, but maybe they feel like they can solve it in this space, or yeah, coach, you know what, move the cones back a yard and that'll fix it. You know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, just thinking out loud while you're speaking, there is something that jumps out at me, is literally what you just said. Do they not understand it, or they're not capable? When I think sometimes the problem that we face as coaches, and I guess the obstacle we put in front of ourselves, is that we know that a player is capable of it, and therefore we synonymize that with they also understand it. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, no, because actually, if you're like me as an example, you know, there's plenty of things that I can do. However, I do genuinely need to see it before I do it, because I need an understanding of what I'm actually trying to do. Whereas on the flip side, you might have yourself who doesn't make necessarily as a player perform as strongly technically, but you don't actually need to see it first. You just get the audio and the instructional aspect, and just, oh yeah, I get what you're looking for. Or maybe it's, you know what I mean? So I think there is that kind of, you know, as coaches, putting a lens on, right, is it the understanding or is it the competency, if you like?
And you know what, that kid who, you know, going up to them who, you know, can do it and saying, hey, everything okay? Right. Because maybe dad has cancer. Maybe their parents are getting divorced. And so they're not super focused tonight because there's a lot going on in their world because they're not robots. They're they're human beings.
100%.
So checking in with them and like, hey, yes, you know, normally you're spot on and you seem a bit off tonight. Is everything okay? Coach, yeah, sorry, this is going on. Yeah, I got you, man. You good? What can I help with? Right. And now I'm not going to get on you because I have a lens to look at why the performance, and it's not because you don't care. It's because there's a lot going on in your life.
And I guess it just helps you manage your expectations with that additional context. But again, look, John, I'm really conscious of time. So I just want to say a massive thank you for obviously being being in the conversation with me today and really just sharing your insights. I don't know if you've got any final thoughts that you'd want to leave with the listeners around some considerations around where to kind of go next with their journeys and some how to become more curious more specifically.
Yeah, I mean, I think number one, I've always liked this idea that great coaches are, you know, architects of an optimal learning environment. So we try to create an environment that socially, emotionally, technically, tactically allows players to take what they learn and then transfer it into a match, right? And within that environment, we're always dialing up or dialing down the pressure through constraints of space, time, defenders, whatever, to get it to the highest level of pressure, which is the game on Saturday, right? And so, you know, we can't always be at game level pressure, whatever. We have to give them their reps. And so create that environment. Number two, I always ask, like when I assess a coach, like one of my first questions is, would I want to be a player in that practice? Right? Because if I would want to play in that practice, it was probably a good practice, and the players would probably want to be there as well. I see a lot of practices that coaches are trying to do this, this, and this. And I'm like, would you be so excited to come back and do that again on Thursday? Like, nah, I don't know. I don't think I would. So I think those are it. And then, you know, there's so many, there's great resources out there. I mean, you know, for all the football coaches out here, like in the UK, I mean, I like, you know, Stuart Armstrong's podcast, The Talent Equation. High Performance is good. I just listened to and sent to all my kids interview they did with Peter Cech, which was, I thought, wonderful on mentality and work ethic and overcoming obstacles and things like that. It was a super interview. You know, our podcast is Way of Champions. And then, you know, as a coach, like I tried, you know, a couple of years ago, I wrote Every Moment Matters, which was, you know, what we had learned from our first 150 podcasts and some phenomenal coaches. And it sort of brought in the self-awareness piece, right? To be a better coach, be a better you. The how people learn and the technical, tactical, how we can create better environments. And then the question that we really have to ask ourselves is, you know, what does it feel like to be coached by me? And I think that's maybe what we miss a lot in coaching education. What does it feel like to be a player in this practice over and over and over? And if we get that part well, and we have the knowledge, then good things are going to happen. And so, you know, people can find my website's changingthegameproject.com. The books are all on Amazon, is probably the easiest place in the UK to find them. And Every Moment Matters just got bought to get translated into Russian. So if anyone here would rather read it in Russian, there you go.
I love that. I love that. And I think, yeah, that one really resonates with me in terms of what does it feel to be coached by me? You know,
yeah.
And I think that's a great place to start. So John, massive thank you. Really appreciate your time. And, you know, guys, make sure you check out John's podcast, check out his books, even the Russian version, if you're interested. but no, really appreciate your time, John.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jeff.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.